I genuinely don't think that there is one reason in the world to hate Lando Norris. Come on, how can you? Did you look at this post-race interview? Did you hear what he said about Lewis Hamilton and about how his dreams have been complete of getting to race at the British GP and stand on the podium here? And then just the joy of him popping the champagne even before Max Verstappen got the golden Silverstone winner's trophy. I can't hate the man anymore. Come on. I mean, I used to wonder, why is this guy the way he is? What's the hype? Nah, I think now things are changing, aren't they? Should we just rename this to the Lando Norris Fan Club podcast now? Come on, Kunal. I think it's a good idea, right? After the high that we've gotten this weekend.
I would love to do that. But the minute we show any allegiances, any fandom, any love for any driver, the other side, you know, the warring faction suddenly gets up saying, where is your unbiased approach, etc. But the truth is, I am yet to come across somebody who says, I don't like Lando Norris. So maybe there isn't a warring faction here or a rival fan club, as we would put it.
Yeah, but deep down, we are all still Fernando Alonso fans on this podcast, aren't we, Sundaram? I know it's a weekend to forget. We're not going to talk about Fernando anymore after this. Let's just let it slide. We still are, right?
We still are the Fernando Alonso fan club. At least from this side, it's going to be that sort of bias always. But I mean, you can't hate Lando Norris. The guy is such a fun-loving driver, and he also delivers the goods when the opportunity arises. So yesterday was that particular situation, and he did extremely well.
We're also the Alex Albon fan club as well now. We're slowly turning into one. I think there's no point admitting that we're not, right? Because the way things are going at the moment, P8 in qualifying, P8 in the race, and just the quality overtake on my old favorite. I'm still sort of adapting to the trauma that Carlos Sainz is having these days. But that was an overtake. That is what Formula One is all about, Kunal. Where even a Williams celebrating their 800th race in their 799th race with a special livery can do something so dramatic as that. That's what Formula One is all about.
That is what Formula One is all about. In fact, this is the Formula One fan club. But if there are any driver clubs out there, Samuel, you're a member of the Carlos Sainz driver club, the Lando Norris fan
club. Please don't tell the world. Not about Carlos Sainz, please.
Then there is the Alexander Albon fan club. And then I know you're a Max Verstappen and a Lewis Hamilton fan as well. And you're a Fernando Alonso. Basically, I think you're a fan of 19 drivers on the grid, and that's what makes you and all of us neutral. You know, we talk good about them when we have to. And yes, the limelight is on Lando Norris. How on earth did he and McLaren and Oscar Piastri do what they did at Silverstone?
Yeah.
I mean, decode that, yes, but that's the main question.
It was amazing. How did they do what they did? How did Williams do what they did? How did Ferrari end up not doing anything? And what eventually happened to Aston? Actually, no, Ferrari did do quite a fair things. They forgot their strategy number or their alphabet, which was meant to happen at some point anyway. But what did Aston Martin not end up doing eventually? But there's so much to talk about. But firstly, folks, we have to tell you who we are. This is the Inside Line F1 podcast. We're one of the top 2.5% podcasts in the world. And of course, one of the top Formula One podcasts in the world as well. Hate saying that, kind of feels like self-bragging, but sometimes you've got to tell the numbers, right?
You have made a Ferrari blooper out here.
What?
We were top 2.5 7 years ago. Now we've broken into the top 1.5. So it's at plan A, plan B, plan C, plan CX, whatever. But yeah, we have.
Hey, lovely. So that's an even better way to celebrate. My name is Somal Arora. I'm the host of the Indian Racing League on Star Sports. And I've also done lots and lots of other stuff in the world of motorsport. Joining me is, of course, F1 stats guru Sundaram, who is now part of the WTF1 talent roster as well. His stats have been done by Crofty on the Sky F1 broadcast so many times as well. And so you better follow him on social media for knowing the story behind the numbers. And also, Kunal Shah, former marketing head of the Force India F1 team, an FIA accredited journalist for the Viaplay network. And this weekend, Kunal, you were also the expert on the Viaplay TV network, right? I said expert with a connotation. Sounds like more fun. Expert.
Yeah. I actually was on camera this weekend for Viaplay in Norway. It was a lot of fun. I got to literally sit with lots and lots of data like I used to do in the good old days. And dissect what's happening, why is it happening, why will certain things not happen, etc. Which is why, you know, it'll be great to add on a lot of data points to the questions you asked. Why did McLaren do? Oh, how did McLaren do what they did? How did Ferrari do what happened to Ferrari eventually? And Albin, and just so many exciting narratives. Oh my God. That was, you know, if we were to just call Formula One as everything below, you know, P2 in a race and below, I think it was probably the most exciting race. It's the fourth time in succession. So four races in a row, we've had a different driver from a different team finish in P2. We've had, I think, Fernando Alonso there. We had Charles Leclerc there. We had Lewis Hamilton there. And now we had Lando Norris.
Exactly.
And how did that happen? That's exciting to actually dig in through and debate that.
Let's get to that right away. Because, Sundaram, let's focus on this aspect, right? If you take Max Verstappen away, Formula One is literally having its most golden period, where it could be either of McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari, or even Aston Martin. And sometimes, even Williams pitching in their nose somewhere in the middle as well in that whole fight. What more could you ask for? Honestly, what more could you ask for?
That's why I think this is the most competitive grid that we've seen in quite a while. And the fact that literally all teams are scoring. I think all the teams have already scored points this year, which is some sort of a rarity that you don't tend to see a lot. And the fact that you see a team like Williams actually being strong around certain circuits is so nice to see. And sort of fortunes that McLaren have had. I mean, preseason testing, they were literally nowhere. We had Craig Scarborough on the podcast and he was disappointed or surprised at the direction McLaren went and the way they've turned that around just by a couple of upgrades. And what I'm really happy to see is those upgrades were finally delivered to Oscar Piastri as well. And even he is able to show the sort of performances that Lando was able to do in Austria. And I think the biggest takeaway for me, I think a lot of questions were around if that pace was just a one-off in Austria. But the fact is, Austria and Silverstone are so contrastingly different circuits. One with many long straights and slow corners where traction is more important. And here in Silverstone, downforce is more important because you have so many high-speed corners. And McLaren has been dominant. And I wouldn't say dominant, but I would say they were really quick across both circuits. So it's not just luck, it's pure pace. And it's great to see many teams actually trying to, you know, chip in into that P2, P3 battle. It's great.
Hey, P1 battle. We're only commentating on Formula 1.5. Yes. F1 does not exist anymore. That's a different league. We have to give 30 seconds to Max Verstappen. I think let's clear the obligation right away. What a drive at the start as well. Amazing. Totally calm when the restart, when the first start happened and he got passed by Lando Norris. That's the sign of a champion. Wasn't phased all along. And he didn't take two qualifyings to make sure that his qualifying was correct, unlike his teammate. So that's the 30 seconds of glory that Max Verstappen deserves. Man, just leave the sport. You have nothing to prove, my friend. Go away. But No.
He should go on and make history.
No,
you
come
know,
on.
Do the whole streak and remember, win all the races he can. I loved it. You know, let me put it this way. Qualifying was another Max Verstappen special. He was 2.5 tenths ahead of Lando Norris. But those 2.5 tenths was Max Verstappen. There was literally turn 6 and turn 15 where he made up on all his time against Lando Norris. So, you know, the way I was reading the data, Norris could have almost been on pole, right? But it was Max Verstappen who could eke out that. And I love it. I mean, you know, I'll put it in our personal perspective. We all strive to be the best version of ourselves every day. Right? Imagine you actually do that and you achieve your goals and targets every single day that you do that. Max is doing exactly that. It's superhuman effort to do that across different circuits, across different challenges, variables, weather conditions, all of that. That's why I absolutely love what Max Verstappen is doing. And let's remember, I was enjoying the same thing when Lewis Hamilton was doing what he was doing, but Sebastian Vettel was doing what he was doing, when Michael Schumacher was doing what he was doing. And it's about watching a man and his machine in sync, in unison, beating everyone they can.
That too with an injured hand, Sundaram.
Supposedly he does have an injured hand, but it doesn't really seem to be affecting his driving. I think he's generally in a very nice mood, as we kind of came to know in the post-race press conference. He's off lately, he's been in a nice mood. There's literally not a lot of swearing and everything. But two important stats, I wouldn't say one is particularly important. One is a little useless, in my opinion. The fact is, Max Verstappen has won the last 13 races that have happened on clockwise circuits. And I initially thought this was a very useless stat. But the fact is, he's really going for it. And the next four races are also on clockwise circuits. And it really does not look like that he's going to be stopping anytime soon. He's going to be taking all the records. He's going to be going past all the milestones. And another important milestone is Verstappen has won the last five races from pole position. And the last time that actually happened was Michael Schumacher in 2001. No other driver has had five consecutive poles and converted them to race wins.
Wonderful. What a stat.
Ask Leclerc about it. Clearly. My word. But yeah, the clockwise point. It's interesting you mentioned that. We also need to now dig down and find out what's the streak for the most number of consecutive wins at any clockwise circuit. Because now Red Bull are breaking.
He already owns it. I think he did that. 8 was the record which Alberto Ascari set in the early 1950s. I forget right now the exact season, but 8 was the record, and Verstappen's now on 13.
Incredible.
Man, that is some digging to do, dude. That is,
yeah. Which is why Max Verstappen should stay. I would love to see. Imagine whoever challenges Max Verstappen and is able to beat him and win. Imagine the rise of that story, or the rise of that hero, the rise of that team. That's the story. That's the narrative that I'm now going to look out for. Do I want him beaten? No, but the whole journey for somebody to get there. It's the same thing, right? The way Max became a Hamilton beater. Who is going to be the Verstappen beater? Could it be Lando Norris? Could it be Oscar Piastri? Lots of narratives from the British Grand Prix. My mind still goes back into how did McLaren do it. And McLaren, actually, there are two very interesting data points. Their old spec car, before all the upgrades came, in Barcelona, which is again a high-speed sequence circuit, they were really quick out there as well. But they were in the lower side of the top 10. In Silverstone, with the upgrades, they were at the sharper end of the top 10. That's one point. Second is they actually had the best cornering efficiency of the top five teams. And the difference is, like, for example, Mercedes has a 23% cornering efficiency with their setup from qualifying. But McLaren had a 20... Sorry, Mercedes at 23, McLaren at 26. Wait, so even with the three...
What does cornering efficiency properly mean in that
means
regard?
Means that McLaren were actually quicker in the high-speed sections. How do you measure? When you say somebody's quicker in a high-speed section, you can measure them lap time-wise, you can measure them percentage-wise. So when you do an absolute percentage, it was actually Mercedes. I still remember, till they came to Maggots, Beckett's, and Chapel, George Russell was almost a little bit ahead. It was 0.02 seconds ahead of Lando Norris. It was then through the high-speed sections and through Stowe that Lando Norris made up 90% of his 2/10 on George Russell. So anyway, it was this high-speed cornering efficiency that worked in qualifying. It's the same high-speed cornering efficiency that helped Lando Norris keep Lewis Hamilton at bay. We could see Lewis Hamilton try different lines, different corners, but Lando could just hammer it in there. And the one question, Lando said going on the hard was the wrong tire. I have two ways to look at it. We will never know. Now it's just an opinion. Firstly, if he was on the soft, then the question is, could he have challenged Max Verstappen for the win? Because he was very, very close on, race pace as well. But, even if he would have challenged, I still believe Max would have overtaken him on track, because it's just Red Bull is a far more efficient car. But on the hards, for him to keep Lewis Hamilton on the soft behind was pretty epic. And one of the only reasons he could do that is the McLaren was actually better in switching on their tires, the hard tire, whereas Lewis's soft tires, after a couple of laps of chasing Lando, were shot.
I have an interesting point on this, because this is something even Crofty mentioned on the broadcast, that McLaren is pretty good in switching on their tires. But I think there's another aspect to it. McLaren this year have had high tire degradation issues as well on a couple of circuits. So maybe that's the reason why McLaren went that way for choosing hard tires. And if you look at the circuit characteristics. Silverstone is a very abrasive circuit, a track that's very hard on the tires. So maybe that also helped. I mean, their disadvantage kind of became their advantage in this particular scenario. It could have probably helped Ferrari as well, but in recent races, they've been saying that they've been able to manage their tire degradation. And unfortunately, that turned out to be their disadvantage this time because Leclerc was not able to switch on his tires at all. So I think that's probably another way of looking at it.
Yeah, that's true. And I believe McLaren's rise in form was down to upgrades, yes, motivation, British fans, yes, but it was also down to circuit characteristics and very crucially circuit temperatures. So it was a very lethal mix that came together to get them the positions that they did. I mean, it took them one race to double their points tally and overtake Alpine in the Constructors' Championship.
And while that was happening, Fernando Alonso was laughing in the background when Oscar Piastri got told that they have beaten Alpine in the Constructors' Championship, at least for now. That is poetry in motion. Fernando Alonso is still holding up those grudges. But on that McLaren front for 1 second, I think they didn't even have a choice. They were on the mediums initially. And the 15-lap mark is such an awkward range to be, right? Slightly out of range for the softs if you're pushing that hard. Slightly out of range for the hards as well, because it's too short for that period as well. And eventually it worked out. But imagine being on the pit wall for that strategy call. Oh, come on. That is a tricky, tricky place to be. Something that Ferrari have been in before. Come on, guys. It's finally happened. Ferrari have forgotten what their plans A, B, C, D, whatever they might have been are. It was meant to happen at some point. It has happened right now. I am amazed. The British GP keeps on giving.
And it was the driver who actually remembers everything who forgot their strategy options. If it was Charles, you could have probably been like, yeah, that's okay, you know. But it was the chief strategy officer at Ferrari who actually forgot the strategy options. And it was a bummer. I mean, Ferrari read so many things wrong. They read the tire degradation rate wrong. They actually didn't use their tires as much. Yeah. That's what Frederick Vasseur said. And which is why when George Russell kept going on the soft and then they pitted Leclerc on the medium, the only reason they actually did that, you know, and I said this on the Viaplay show as well, was to try and force George Russell to pit. But guess what? He did not pit. And that's it. That was the end of Ferrari's strategy. And then everything just went the Ferrari way as it should have. Yeah.
Have you guys seen any sort of street fight where one person tries to intimidate the other person? Okay, they've thought about this all along. When they go to a fight with another person, they're like, I will stand my ground. So they puff their chest and they'll be like, okay, fight me. Then the other person throws a punch and then they're confused because they haven't thought about what happens when the other person throws a punch. And Ferrari quite simply just couldn't really deal with it. And it's amazing that they forgot that Mercedes also have a really great sensor in the car, which is called a driver. And the driver did a good job.
Oh, Russell did a terrific job on those soft tires. How many laps did he go? 1 second. He went 28 laps on those soft tires when Pirelli's Pirelli's suggestion was that it could probably last only 15 laps. And he's really outdone the soft tires in that sense. And I know Leclerc were trying to force a move or trying to force a pit stop of from George Russell. And I was actually tracking Leclerc's times at the time, at that point, and also looking at the track temperatures. Track temperatures had gone higher up. Leclerc had switched to hards. It was in Ferrari's kitty to literally turn on the tires and force Russell into a pit stop. It did not happen. For some reason, it did not happen. And I don't know if it's probably because of Pirelli's new construction tires, which are more, more stronger in the construction, if that kind of didn't work in their favor. But unfortunately, Ferrari once again have dropped it.
And how? And how? Because this 1 year ago was their race weekend. And sure, things have changed. Cars have changed. Upgrades keep on coming along. Cars get faster. There's more ways to gain time. But remember, 1 year ago, they legitimately took pole position and won the race here. Let's say 60% on merit because Max Verstappen had that issue with the wing stuck underneath their car. This can't be happening. Come on. They just can't be the fourth fastest team here this weekend. And also, that move when Alex Albon overtook Carlos Sainz around the outside. That shouldn't be happening, dude.
I'll tell you what. I have this in my notes for today's episode. I had written Albon overtakes Sainz best. And that's exactly what I've written. I think that was the best overtake of the race. Because the corner in which he actually took went past Sainz is such a high speed corner. You do not break into that corner. Yeah. And Albon still had the guts to do it, and it came off clean. It came off clean.
And even Gasly with that battle with Sainz as well, where Gasly took first Carlos Sainz around the outside at Lovefield itself. Yeah. And then Sainz with the move at Copse. Holy wow. That is why you watch racing in the first place.
Gasly wasn't pleased. Gasly wasn't pleased with that in the post-race pen. He had a little bit of a moment with Sainz. I don't know if people have seen that, but he was not pleased with Sainz pushing him off track.
But hey, Sainz or Stroll? Because I think that, Sundaram, was the move of the race. Lance Stroll. I mean, that... Hey, say what you want. He is the ultimate entertainer. I know people get pissed off when I say this, but I think he's the driver who adds the most value to their team in Formula One. Genuinely, it's not Max Verstappen carrying Red Bull Racing. It's not Alex Albon carrying Williams. It's Lance Stroll carrying Aston Martin. Because let's not forget, his contribution is so great off the track. Had he not been someone else's son, the team wouldn't have been alive. So
yes. Yes, in that sense, yes. But I was really trying to figure out after Stroll and Gasly's incident yesterday, what is the reason that this happens? And one of the things that was floating through my mind is that this year we've seen very less retirements in general, okay, in terms of retirements from collisions. Unfortunately, we don't have the likes of Mazepin, Latifi, Mick Schumacher and all and the likes. And this year you have more experienced drivers who are driving. You don't see a lot of retirements. We've also seen two races that did not have a single retirement, which is a very rare thing in Formula One. And then you have Stroll going off the curbs and literally T-boning Gasly and sending him into a retirement. And I think that was really poor judgment from Stroll on both occasions. I think I think that's 50-50 call when he overtook Gasly. What corner was it? After the Wellington straight? Hangar straight. After the Hangar straight. So I think that was a little bit of a controversial pass. Stroll probably definitely needed a penalty from the stewards there, and fortunately for him, he didn't get a penalty for passing Gasly off track limits. But yeah, the move after that, probably not the wisest thing to do.
But dude, what sort of precedent does that set out that this is not a penalty? After we've had a million track limits penalties just a week ago, where they've been constantly putting a human to police everything, they've gone out there and made another stupid human mistake at the end of the day. Well, racing is meant to be grey. There's always some sort of grey area in there. But if you have sort of set a black and white precedent that, hey, going off track is not allowed just 1 week ago, how is it that a driver can go off track and then push somebody else and go past? I think we all should just beat up the stewards every single week, right? We should just have a 5-minute segment where we beat up the stewards and move on. Just satisfy our mental problems with them and then just go ahead with it. It's a perfect punching bag.
No, I think this does set a bad precedent for going forward, because especially if a team like Alpine... Well,
they also have a bad precedent, to be very honest, if you look at it that way.
No, but it does set a bad precedent in that sense that if Alpine later on goes and passes someone else outside track limits, they are going to be going back to the stewards and they're going to be telling them, see, Lance Stroll did this in Britain. Why are we being penalized? And in that sense, that's why we ask for more consistency in the application of the rules. Just last week when we had, close to 1,200 potential violations, 83 laps deleted in the race itself. And then you go and have this, which I think was pretty straightforward, that Stroll should have given the place back. But yeah, I think we're giving it just way too much attention than it probably deserves.
So let's actually give some attention to Aston Martin, if we have a couple of minutes for that. The reason being, it seemed like a couple of weeks ago that they were the big thing. And yes, deep down, we are still Fernando Alonso fans, like we mentioned at the start. That's not going to change. The reason why is not just what happens on the track, but the fact that he was laughing in the press conference room or the media pen when Oscar Piastri got told that McLaren F5 Alpine. But the thing is, on track, it is a little bit problematic the way things are going, Sundaram. And I don't think that it's a lot to do with Aston Martin getting slower. It's just that other teams have also caught up with time so much that suddenly their upgrades and their pace doesn't quite seem to be as good anymore. And that's remarkable, because now we get to know that there's just not them in that fight. There's also McLaren around. There's also Alpine around. Williams sometimes will be poking their nose in. So if anything, I think the stakes are higher, and more than anything, they need two quality drivers to extract the pace out of that car, not one.
Oh, that's a brilliant point that you made, because I think we've kind of realized, and even the other teams have realized, that Aston Martin made the most of their pace advantage to the through the first half or first few races of the season. And once every team started bolting on their upgrades, each and every team literally became faster even for a couple of races. So we've seen Alpine doing well, Mercedes doing well, Ferrari doing well, and now McLaren is catching them. And all of a sudden, all the hype and all the talk about Fernando Alonso's number 33 and all the other different rumors that were doing the rounds, it's all gone into silence right now. And it kind of screams in that sense that Aston Martin are probably not the second fastest team anymore. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do in the next couple of races. Hungary might be probably in their favor, but it's going to be very interesting to see how they get back into the midfield fight.
I think Hungary is definitely going to be one of those tracks. They are back. I think Hungary is also where McLaren are probably going to struggle. With all the data, again, that's my daughter saying hi to everybody. But with all the data, McLaren...
1 second. The point is, she's unhappy because you said McLaren will struggle. Why are you breaking a young girl's heart, Kunal? Come on. Everyone wants to see them do well. But no, I think it's interesting that he mentions that as well, Sundaram. Because at the moment, as things go right now, Silverstone stands to be more of a mixed circuit where you've got lots of high-speed corners, but still three major straights where you can make up that time as well. Even though McLaren isn't quite the best in the world over there, but a couple of slow corners here and there, we can do your thing. But at Hungary, it'll be an even bigger test. If anything, that'll be revealing so much about where the grid stands as well. And traditionally, it's been the last race before the halfway mark of the season. This time, not so much because we're having Belgium before that as well. But there's just so much that we're getting to learn about where the grid stands and also how the lower midfield stacks up as well that makes it such a good year. I think we're in the golden period of Formula One, if anything.
Golden period behind Max Verstappen. I'm sure a lot of people don't particularly find it interesting that he's winning these many races, that too without much of a competition. But the fact is that behind him, there is really a lot happening. And we can probably get a couple of hints as to who might be strong. Like, for example, Aston Martin might be strong in Hungary. Alex Albon has literally gone on record to say that Hungary might not be our strongest circuit. It doesn't really suit our car and we might be able to come back in Belgium. But the fact is, we really don't know at this point. No one really knows, because sort of upgrades that teams are bringing in for every race, especially around this particular time, teams like Ferrari, Mercedes could really be in the mix because they have such different operating windows. And I think we'll just get to see what happens closer to race day.
And
just one further point, you know, this,
yeah,
I really think that the regulations are working to some extent and probably not also working to in another extent, because teams like McLaren and the others who've had more time in the wind tunnel, they are able to make gains on track when they're able to bring their upgrades. So in that sense, you might be able to say that the regulations are working. But a team that's actually copped a wind tunnel penalty does not seem to be phased or affected by that penalty at all.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's sort of counterproductive in a way, the fact that we're having these regulations, because you need more wind tunnel time and also more spending ability to catch up with Red Bull Racing that certainly Mercedes and Ferrari don't have. So perhaps we're in that situation where Red Bull are just stuck at the top. It's a plateau of sorts where nobody can really catch up because there's not enough money to catch up. And if they do really well in year two and then finish second, they eventually will not have enough wind tunnel time to catch up as well. So I find it interesting. I think that's where the sliding scale aero will play its part over the course of the next few years and to see how teams develop it. But I think it's working. It's working. A few weeks ago, I think in Miami, we were talking about the product not being fun enough, about something really missing. It helps that the tracks that we've come to since then have been very open, that you are able to pass over there and DEG has not been much of a problem. So you can actually see drivers and teams pushing hard and not worrying about conserving. Long may this continue, honestly, because the last 3-4 weeks have just been amazing for Formula One.
Just one more stat to add to that, because we've been talking about how competitive the midfield is. 5 teams have actually led the opening lap this season, which we really don't tend to see a lot. And the last time we actually saw more than five teams. Yeah. So there was Red Bull, Aston Martin, Mercedes, Ferrari, and now McLaren. They've led the opening lap of race this season. And the last time 5 or more teams led an opening lap was in 2009. There were 7 teams that time.
Wow. Yeah. There were 7 teams. Including Force India,
including Toyota. And now we have 5 teams. And the other point is, we're just 10 races into the season and 6 teams have already taken a podium.
Not bad, dude. Not bad. It's, yeah, I think let's just forget Max, honestly. Acknowledge the greatness and forget him. But you can't forget him for one simple reason. What he's doing at the moment, Sundaram, is something that his teammate just cannot by any means keep up with. It's, I don't even know. How do you describe it? It's strange to see Sergio Perez being reduced to a has-been in this whole equation, where he's just someone you get to 30 minutes after having chatted about every other team. That's just not Sergio Perez. That's not who we know, really. And the way things are working out in qualifying, his inability to work the tires up and get them in the right operating window, and how consistently it has bitten him, I wonder if it's just that now, because it seems, surely it can't happen for 5 races in a row, right? Surely it can't be the same problem all over again. This time, of course, it was that he got caught out by the track evolving in qualifying, and he just wasn't there at the right place at the right time. But nevertheless, it's just absurd. And imagine how much mental pressure that generates, especially when in a team at Red Bull Racing that is known to put the axe out very, very quickly. So at what point does he start to, I don't know, lose confidence in that regard? Because surely that you can't still have confidence to that same level if you're just 5 races down without getting into Q3, especially in a car that's dominating and winning the Constructors' Championship single-handedly with the other driver.
I think that's the biggest pain point for him at this point of time. And having these sort of situations doesn't really bode well for him, especially in a team like Red Bull that has been known for chopping and changing, especially when there's a difficult period for a driver. And although Christian Horner and Helmut Marko do say repeatedly that we're completely backing him, we've seen them, remove drivers or demote them to their junior team, despite saying all those things. And what Perez, I think, is really lacking right now is a little bit of momentum. And we said those very same things. It's surely he's not going to miss Q3 after it happened the second time. But then third, fourth, fifth, it's happened for 5 consecutive races. And that's actually carrying forward to the race as well, because in the last 5 races, he's just taken 51 points. Verstappen, on the other hand, he's taken 136 points. So it's really not working for him. And he's actually gone on record to say that we have a few ideas on what we need to fix. And he specifically did not say that it's his own mistake or some faults in his driving. So he says that we need to change a couple of things. I'm in the simulator this week to try and find a few fixes to that. But it's going to be really crucial for him to get into Q3 firstly and then put a good qualifying spot in Hungary.
And guess what? Daniel Ricciardo is going to be in the car tomorrow. And that is going to be fun to evaluate, to see how well he does in a modern-day Formula 1 car. And I'm sure, when Helmut Marko came on the show and he mentioned that Ricciardo's doing that test and they're going to evaluate him, Red Bull will be keeping all their eyes peeled on there, because it's not a problem right now. But eventually, when the others will catch up, when McLaren's pace will be more consistent, when Mercedes will finally find out if their car is good or not, they will need 2 drivers. And in the top 5 teams, Red Bull and Aston Martin don't quite have a balanced lineup, which will eventually bite them, even though right now they're very close by in the top 3, right? Eventually, those 3 teams. But yeah, I wonder how it's going to play out. But Hungary is next. That's going to be a ton of fun. And by the way, folks, if you are in Mumbai for that race, Versova Social is the place to be. So join us for that one. And if you turned up for our British GP show last time out at Car Social, all 107 of you, guys, thank you. It really was so much fun to interact and talk Formula One with you. And we hope that you'll be back for more. So check out the link in the description to see how you can sign up and get tickets for the Versova Social event for the Hungarian GP as well. But in the meantime, to stay in touch with us, follow us on all our social media handles. Subscribe to the Inside Line F1 podcast. Share it with your friends, family members, or anyone who might love Formula One. And we'll be back rather soon for the Hungarian GP preview. Take care, folks. Bye-bye.